I'm Steve Kraske, and this is KCUR's Up to Date. I'm sure I don't need to tell you that today is Friday, and we couldn't think of a better way to spend the end of the work week than with a nice glass of wine. That's why on today's show, we'll sip and sit down with Master Sommelier Doug Frost for a live broadcast from Holyfield Winery in beautiful Basser, Kansas. From fickle weather to fighting invasive beetles, growing grapes in Missouri and Kansas isn't so simple. We'll talk with regional vintners about the creativity and craft of making wine in the Midwest and ask what we should look for from this year's crop. Did I mention we'll be drinking wine on a very special up-to-date after this hour's news? In all the years we've been talking about wine on this program, it's always been in the confines of the KCUR studios. Today, something different. On a beautiful day as summer is winding down, we're on the deck at Holyfield Vineyard and Winery in Basser, Kansas, with a view of rows of neatly tended grapevines that were harvested not all that long ago. Being in a place where the grapes are grown and where the wine is made just lends itself to the conversation. And joining me is the man who always shows up to teach me more about this libation. That's Master Sommelier and Master of Wine, Doug Frost. Doug, good to have you back. Welcome.
Well, thank you, Steve. Nice to be back. I'm just pouring a little vignole juice here.
All right.
Get us started.
I also want to introduce the co-owner of Holyfield Vineyard and Winery. That's Michelle Meyer. Michelle, thank you for coming and letting us be here with you today.
Our pleasure to have you here. Yeah.
Michelle, give us a brief history of how you and your father started Holyfield here.
Well, Holyfield Vineyard and Winery started in 1986 when my father and I planted our first 400 grapevines. And to tell you the truth, we were just planting them for fun and for our own home wine making. But I always tell people my dad just likes to dig holes, and that ended up with 17 acres of grapes. And then we had to open a winery.
There you go. Doug, do you remember the first time you became aware of Holyfield and maybe the first time you even tasted their wine out here?
Oh, absolutely. I was on KCUR, and we're talking about wine, and we're talking about local wine, and a call came through. Somebody said, so you haven't recommended anybody from Kansas. And I said, I have to be honest, I haven't found any wines grown in Kansas yet that I really, you know, believe I should bring to everybody's attention.
And a certain woman sitting at this table happened to be listening at that moment,
I
have the story right.
I believe you're right. I think she made a quick call and said, well, maybe you should try our wine. My response was, my ruse worked perfectly. Please send me free wine. Mm-hmm. So she sent me some wine, and I tasted through them. The whites I thought were a little rough. The reds I thought were really good. The red, I guess it was it a Chamberson?
Chamberson.
Yeah, it was a Chamberson. It was delicious. And it was one of those, who are you? Where is this? I have to go there. And that was 23 years ago. I immediately... I couldn't tell you how many times I've been out here. It's a short hop out this way, and I love what Michelle and her dad have done. They've made some fantastic wine, in my opinion.
So if you plant it, Michelle, Doug will come. That's the bottom
line.
All
you need to do is give him some wine.
Yeah.
That's true. My wife knows that.
How many acres do you have planted out here, and what varieties of grape are you growing?
Well, we have about 17 acres of wine grapes, all French hybrid varietals, and then some Native American. The Cynthiana or the Norton grape is grown here. Saval, Vignole, Melody, Valvin Muscat, Chamberson, St. Vincent.
Is there anything particular about growing grapes in Kansas that has proven tricky for you, or not really?
Well, I think in Kansas, we were one of the pioneers of vineyards and wineries in the state. And, you know, when we started our vineyard, it was pre-Google, and you just couldn't Google
how to grow grapes, yeah.
And so my father and I asked a lot of our friends in Missouri about, you know, grape varietals, because we wanted to plant appropriate grapes for the Midwest, cold, hardy things. Mm-hmm. So most of the vineyards in Missouri and Kansas are growing French hybrids, mm-hmm. Because they're cold, hardy enough, and they're conducive to our climate. So We learned a lot just by talking to people. And like I said, my dad likes to dig holes, and we kept growing grapes. And
well, what was the toughest thing for you to learn about all this?
Well, you're still learning. I mean, you just never know at all. I mean, Mother Nature gives you a curveball every year.
And this year it's the rain.
Oh, yeah.
And what has that meant for you?
Well, you spend a lot of time thinking, oh, God, what's going to happen next, you know? So, I mean, you worry about fungus disease mainly in the fruit and getting it off at, you know, optimum ripening as far as winemaking potential. And sometimes fungus disease can come into play when there is a lot of rain. Plus, we've had cool nights, which are nice, but it leaves a heavy dew, and that can also cause problems with vineyard management. So, you know, you spend a lot of time worrying about Mother Nature, and, you know, my dad always says she can be one cruel mother.
You know, Doug, I guess the bottom line here is that growing grapes, the wine business, it sounds lovely, but it's tough work.
It's farming. I mean, first and foremost, it's a fascinating product because it's one that we can drink and find very specific flavors in. But at the end of the day, it's just good old farming. And so there is a lot of very difficult work involved long before anybody starts turning this stuff into wine. I mean, this is the vignole juice that
What have you poured here? Explain what this is.
Well, I should let Michelle explain.
Well, this is a grape called vignole. It's commonly grown in the Midwest in both Kansas and Missouri. It's one of my favorite grapes. And so this is a grape that we're planning on harvesting tomorrow. So last night I did a random berry sample, and I pressed off this small amount of juice this morning just to test the sugar levels and so we could all taste it.
So this is raw grape juice?
Just fresh pressed this morning.
Yeah. And then what happens to this if you decide to go ahead?
Well, I'm going to go ahead because it's looking really positive.
It's really sweet.
You got to have sweet to have alcohol, honey. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I'm just trying to understand. And so this meets your satisfaction level.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yes. I think so.
And then what's going to happen tomorrow?
So tomorrow we'll have about 100 people out here picking grapes with us. And everybody comes in the morning. We do all of our picking with the help of volunteers. So I have a huge box of pruners. We talk about how to pick grapes successfully without injuring a digit. We go out into the different sections. We cut the clusters. We load them all up on a trailer, take them straight down to the cellar, and crush and press them and get them in a cool tank.
And so this is a big day after months and months of growing these grapes then. This is sort of the product of all your work.
Farmers only get one payday a year, and it's harvest.
So it's coming tomorrow.
Yeah. Right, and that's what we make. And then, you know, every week, not all the grapes ripen at the same time. So different weekends and different days are spent harvesting different grapes. But I think the vignoles are ready to come off. And so it should be a really good day.
Hey, and do you judge that purely by taste, or are you doing some sort of chemical
analysis? Well, I do. Of course, I taste it. But we do what we call a Brix reading, which is your sugar solids, which are, you know, flavor profiles and potential alcohol. And then we also check for the pH to make sure the acids are in balance.
Of course you want your acids in balance. Yes, that's a very, very good idea, Michelle. I like that. Yeah. Yeah. Doug, what are some of the qualities that you like in Holyfield wines?
Well, I think that they have successfully, interpreted these grapes and in various styles. So
interpreted these grapes.
Well, it's really true. I mean, you're given these sets of flavors that can come from the grapes, and then the yeast get to them, and they will alter those flavors, if you will, or add to those flavors. And everybody has a way of looking at it. And I just happen to like these grapes a lot. I like them, when they're expressive and aromatic and fresh and tangy. So I like that, you know, that acidity level that you guys were just referencing. I mean, I think that's important.
Does this taste ready to you? I mean, as you taste it?
Well, yeah, absolutely. I think there's some aromatic precursors. You know, there's a little bit of a floral note there. There's kind of a tropical note there already happening. And it's certainly sweet and tangy. You know, it's a real sweet tart drink right now. When the yeast get to it, then they'll take most of that sugar away, depending upon how Michelle decides to ferment it, you know, ferment it completely, leave a little sugar in there. One of the things that people don't understand, I think, about a lot of the grapes that grow in this area, there's always this knee-jerk response of, oh, all the grapes here are sweet. And it's like, okay, stop it for a second. The wines here often are sweet. And one of the reasons is that the grapes that we grow here are incredibly tart. If you make them in a dry version, sometimes they're just too tart for most people. Frankly, they have more acidity than most of these, you know, so-called famous grapes that we talk about from the West Coast, mm-hmm. like Chardonnay and Sauvignon Blanc, and et cetera. Those wines can be made in a perfectly bone-dry style, and they're not, you know, abrasive and intense. These grapes, it's more difficult to do that, I think. But Vignol is one of these grapes. I love it as a sweet wine, but when it's made into a dry wine, really, really love it. It's harder to do, I think. I think it's a lot harder to make a dry Vignol than it is to make a dry Chardonnay, frankly. I think the winemakers in this area have to work harder, have to be more clever than winemakers on the left coast.
And when you say clever, you mean...
Well, there's just a lot of tricks to, of the trade, I think, when it comes to a grape, let's say like Norton, the so-called, you know, well, not so-called, but the official state grape of Missouri. There are things that winemakers have to do that, and steps that winemakers have to take that a Zinfandel or a Cabernet producer would just never have to mess with at all. They'd crush the grapes, stick it in some sort of fermenting vessel, and go have a beer. And of course, I'm being a little bit, you know, flippant about it, but I believe that it is harder to make good wine here than it is in places like California and Washington and Oregon, and that's why it took us a while to get really good at it.
Michelle, your bottles are for sale only in Kansas. Do I have that right?
Yes.
And why is that?
Well, in Kansas, so we have a retail tasting room here on our property, just through the door where we are, and we're open 7 days a week year-round, with the exception of Christmas, Thanksgiving, and Easter. So most of our retail sales actually do take place here at the winery. But in Kansas, we're allowed to do what's called self-distribute to local retailers. So our wines are also available on the Kansas side of the state line at a variety of retail liquor stores.
I gotcha.
And in order to distribute in Missouri, I would need to have a wholesaler. And I just, you know, I can sell it from here, so that's just... our choice.
In a good year, how many bottles do you produce?
We do about 4,000 cases.
So 48,000 bottles.
48,000 bottles.
We're a small boutique winery.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're not Gallo on the Prairie.
Well, if you're just joining us, this is Up to Date, and we're coming to you this morning from the Holyfield Winery in Basser, Kansas. I want to bring in two more winemakers into our conversation. From Kansas, a familiar name, Tom Holland, who, when he's not working in Topeka as a state senator from the 3rd District, is working on Haven Point Winery that he and his wife Barbara started just in the last couple of years. Senator, it's nice to have you here. Welcome.
Good morning, Steve.
And representing the Show Me State is Corey Baumgars. He's general manager and winemaker emeritus of Le Beaujolais Winery in Rocheport, Missouri. Corey, nice to have you too.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Let's go around the table here. What is each of you looking to achieve with your winemaking? Corey, let me start with you.
You know, that's a pretty big question. So, you know, what we're trying to achieve with our winemaking is to really kind of what Doug was talking about, express the best thing we can do with the grapes that we have in our area. So we really want to express the flavors and also make them in styles that are varying enough that we can appeal to a broad consumer base.
And it's so, Le Beaujolais, right?
It is Le Beaujolais.
Le Beaujolais. Yeah. Okay.
Exactly.
Tom, how about you?
Well, basically, you know, I'm a startup winery, and so and I got to give a shout out to Michelle because she's been my mentor in this process. She was the one that basically I kept on bugging her about, gee, how do you get started in this business? And she just challenged me, said, look, just go for it. And so I based on her suggestions and support, I bought my initial fermentation buckets, and I got to it. And so, you know, we sold about 600 gallons of wine this past year. We'll be doing about 1,000 gallons this year. But, you know, what I'm trying to do is basically, as Michelle has always told me and many others, it's like, you know, if you're going to make wine in Kansas, you know, be sure it's drinkable. Don't make a bad product. So I've been very, I guess, wanting to be sure that whatever we put out the door, it is good. We're currently in 12 liquor stores here in Northeast Kansas. We do have a small retail operation that we have set up on our property. We're open on the weekends, but right now my concern, my challenge is being sure that I've got a business model that I can support and grow.
What was your hesitation to get involved, Tom? What was scary to you about all this?
You know, there are so many dynamics here. I mean, when you look at first of all, making wine. I went to Highland Community College. I took some weekend and evening courses on winemaking. Found I really enjoyed it. One of the best surprises about this, has just been the support from other winemakers in the area.
As Michelle, kind of a club, I gather.
Well, a way, but I mean, it's almost like it, just the support from the other winemakers. I mean, Michelle has been great. I mean, you know, she allowed me actually to work in her winery doing various functions out here, so I learned some of the business that way. Other folks like Greg Scheib, Davenport, Pep Solberg at Blue Jacket. You know, those folks help me troubleshoot issues, whatever. I mean, just always very much willing to just give a hand if I've got a question, to go to them, to be a great resource. A lot of camaraderie there, but, you know, once again, wanting to support you, to help you be successful in the way they can. And that has just been a great experience. Also, Tony Kugler, I remember he helped me fill out my first TTB forms, my annual reports. So, I mean, just people willing to give you a hand, and that has really been the difference.
Corey Baumgartz, do you find the same sort of fellowship over in Missouri?
Yeah, you know, this whole industry is so collaborative.
Yeah.
You know, we kind of saying, like, one bad bottle of wine in the state looks bad on all of us. So we really help out quite a bit, and we do help out across lines, too.
Yeah. So like a new glass of wine has been poured here. What are we checking out?
This is Michelle's Valvin Muscat. Valvin Muscat is a relatively new grape in our area, and it's a grape I get a huge kick out of. It's intensely floral. You can find it in dry versions. You can find it in sweet versions. This one's a bit sweet and just as friendly as it can be, and just, you know, like vivacious. It's like taking spring flowers and throwing them in the air and they land in a glass. I mean, it's crazy.
Wow, there's a good metaphor for it, Michelle.
I love that.
Yeah, Corey, what do you think of this?
You know, I love this wine. I love this grape. It's, you know, this thing's a kick. We get our grapes from Southern Missouri on a vineyard we run. And when the truck comes in, you open the door, and it just, like, it knocks you over with the Muscat varietals. I mean, it's amazing, fun grape.
I'm wondering about the growing conditions, Tom Holland. Is it very different between here and where you are south of Lawrence?
Well, first of all, just my focus, Steve, has been on my wine harvest, but on the winemaking side. So, you know, I did put in a half-acre vineyard a couple years ago. Those grapes obviously not come yet to production, so I'm just kind of learning that side of it. So I really can't provide kind of like a comparison as far as different soil types between the areas.
Corey, what about Les Bourgeois? It's right by the Missouri River, and how does that affect the vines there?
You know, we get a little bit of what you call lake effect by the Missouri River. We get some temperature stabilization. So our sites...
Is that a good thing?
It's a really good thing, because one of the biggest challenges is kind of spring frost damage in our area. So you could have a beautiful crop setting, and you can lose it with, you know, 19 degrees in April, which has happened a few times to us.
Yeah.
So we get a little bit of a buffer from that. We also have some pretty deep soils over there, because there's all the wind-blown loess along the Missouri River.
And the soil is more moist?
It can hold more moisture and has more depth, so we have a little more drought resistance.
You know, this year, as I mentioned, we've had a lot of rain in areas with only a short period of ultra-high temperatures. All in all, it's been very pleasant for humans, Michelle. How did the grapes like the weather this summer?
I'd say they like it. I like it.
They're happy grapes?
Happy grapes made happy wine. Mm-hmm. So, honestly, the growing season has been pretty good. We got warm kind of early, like sometimes happens in the Midwest, but we didn't have any spring freezes. Overall, I'd say, with the exception of the rain recently, everything's been really, really good.
Yeah. Were the grape varieties you tried that just didn't like it here? If you had some that just went kaput on you?
Some grapes that I tried that didn't like it here.
Yeah.
I think, like most people new to the business, 20-some years ago, we tried our hand at a little bit of vinifera.
Vinifera is basically grape, the species of grape that most people are familiar with, like Chardonnays and Cabernets and Zinfandels and such.
And mm-hmm. I didn't plant any of those. I tried some Cab Franc and some Limburger and some things like that. And I actually made some nice Cab Franc, but You know, they really just weren't cold hardy enough for me to hang my hat on, because I had, you know, I have to make a living at this. And I, in order to do that, I have to have a harvest, and I don't have a real guarantee with vinifera.
Yeah.
So, you know, so that's long gone, and we've concentrated on the French hybrids.
Okay, let's take a break. When we come back, Doug Frost is going to give us some of his recommendations of wines to try before summer is over. Can't believe we're already saying that. From the Holyfield Vineyard and Winery in Basar, Kansas, I'm Steve Kraske, and you're listening to Up to Date on 89.3 KCUR. On yesterday's program, we spoke with a man from Lake Wobegon, Garrison Keillor, and we learned how the mafia survived in Kansas City after the death of mob boss Tom Pendergast. You can find those conversations online at kcur.org. On Monday, the Smart Money experts are back. They'll share financial planning advice for non-traditional couples. That's Monday on KCUR's Up to Date. Well, we're broadcasting live from the Holyfield Winery here in Basar, Kansas. Joining us on the deck overlooking the vines is Holyfield co-owner Michelle Meyer. Tom Holland of Haven Point Winery in Baldwin City, Kansas is also here. We're also joined by the general manager of Les Bourgeois in Rocheport, Missouri. That's Corey Baumgars. And also with us is Doug Frost, one of the only four people in the world to hold the dual title of Master Sommelier and Master of Wine. Doug, did you make any great wine discoveries this summer?
Well, I just got back from Argentina, and I really, really fell in love with Argentine Cabernet Franc. Malbec is what everybody thinks about when they think about Argentine wine, but the thing that was happening for me down there was Cabernet Franc. I cannot say enough how much I love that. But
was that new to you?
Yeah, it really was.
Can anything still be new to you at this point?
Oh, God, yeah. It's exactly like, the winemakers here we're talking about. Every vintage is new. Every harvest is new. And so every year everything changes quite a bit. I've been following Cabernet Franc down there for 25 years. I've been going down there. So it's just that it's finally sort of gained traction. There's enough there to talk about, enough good vineyards to talk about it, and it's showing up in the U.S. market. So that was a happy trip for sure.
What's been your go-to wine lately? Because the one you always keep a bottle of around, I've heard you say over the years, is still a Riesling?
German Riesling in the summertime. Yeah, it's there are many in the fridge. I keep a bunch of them in the fridge because it seems to go down really fast for not just me, but whoever visits and, you know, my family. My girls like it too. I just like German Riesling in the summer. I drink very seasonally. You know, when it gets very, very cold, then I want to have these big, meaty, intense reds. And in the middle of the super heat, usually we get these awful dog day Augusts. It's been super mild and super nice. I'm still drinking a lot of German Riesling.
You know, Michelle, are most of the vineyards around here also wineries, or is there a good number of just vineyards that grow to sell their crops to winemakers here?
I'd say there's a good mix. Most of the wineries in Kansas are in the northeast area, mm-hmm. although there's more and more popping up as you go west.
And what's your definition of a winery? What are we talking about?
Well, a winery is a place where they actually make wine.
Mm-hmm.
And vineyards are places that grow grapes. Sell their grapes to wineries, or some vineyards sell their grapes to home winemakers, people that just want to make some wine at home from grapes. So I'd say there's a good mix.
Some places just grow grapes and let it go with that.
Sure, sure. They're going to sell their fruit to somebody that wants to buy it, either a winery or, like I said, you know, hobbyists.
Yeah. Tom, you support getting the state's great producing regions something called AVA designations. What is that, and have you been successful in getting it?
So we put a resolution through, I believe it was 2016 session. I co-sponsored a bill, a resolution along with Senator Julia Lynn and Senator David Haley. AVA is basically American Viticultural Area, and these are basically designations across the country. And how you basically go about this is basically winemakers in different wine producing regions of the country, they basically put together documentation, the federal government, that explains what is specifically unique about the geographic area, the soil types, just the area, and why that is unique for that particular region. It's basically the way I see it is an opportunity to do branding for the various types of varietals you're growing and selling in that area. Unfortunately, the state of Kansas does not have any. You know, the state of Missouri has a number of AVAs.
Yeah, it's a really important part, I think, of helping people identify what is going on in a particular region and in a particular state. I think it would be very, I think it'd be a great move. And it's always funny, a quick aside, if you will, the very first AVA ever approved by the U.S. government was not Napa Valley. It was Augusta, Missouri.
And, is that right?
Yeah, and just as another aside, so in my second exam in the Master Sommelier program, I flunked that question. I actually did not know that. That was a little embarrassing to have the California boys go, yeah, but you love the Augusta question. I'm like, what Augusta question?
Yeah. So an AVA is a certification, Doug, if I understand right.
It really is a geographic limitation that says that if you're going to make a wine and you're going to put this geographic name, typically it's a geographic name of some sort, on the label, it means those grapes came from that place primarily. And so it helps people identify something, you know, specific and unique to the wine. In Europe, that would then include probably grape varieties, how it was made, even sometimes when it was picked and what sugar levels are and alcohol levels and that sort of thing. In the U.S. and in much of the New World, whether we're talking about South America, we're talking about you know, Australia and places like that, it's simply a geographic limitation. What you grow there, how you make it within that geographic designation is up to each individual.
Corey, what about AVAs on the Missouri side? What are you finding over there?
Yeah, so we have the four. We have Augusta, we have Herman, we have Ozark Mountain and Ozark Highland. So there's some overlap of them. See, we have some broad AVAs that take over big chunks of the state, and we have some really tight ones.
Hey, how would you describe the state of the wine making industry, if you want to call it that, in Missouri right now? How robust is it? What are you seeing?
Well, you used the word I was going to say. You know, it's actually pretty robust.
Yeah.
We've been working, you know, we're like 50 years in now, almost, I think. So
yeah,
our rebirth was in the 60s. And, you know, then we had a kind of a second thrust of wineries in the mid 80s, and then another big push really in the last 10 years. So we're up to 116, 120 wineries.
Is that
like
right?
1,600 acres of grapes. So it's pretty strong.
And I really do think that, to give credit where credit is due, the state of Missouri, the Department of Ag, has been intensely helpful to the industry, and it's been a big factor in Missouri's growth, not just in quantity but in quality. I think you just can't
overstate.
In what way,
Doug?
But providing all sorts. I mean, I should let Corey speak to this, but you know, definitely providing technical assistance, technical information. You know, helping people know where to plant, what to plant, how to make it, all those things. I mean, how do you feel about Corey?
Yeah, no, we have a center at the University of Missouri which has some funding from Department of Agriculture for really about 5-6 positions that focus their research on grape growing.
No kidding.
Yeah, winemaking. So we have a state oenologist, we have a state viticulturalist, we have some marketing help for statewide marketing across to develop the brand. And we do a lot of co-working with like Department of Tourism, Department of Ag. So we really kind of built these networks with all the different government agencies and within private business and the universities to really boost our industry.
It's really the envy of the rest of the country, quite frankly.
It's pretty cool.
I was going to say, Tom Holland, you're a state senator. Do you have the same kind of support on the Kansas side or not?
Well, Michelle could talk to this off as well, probably better than me, but I mean,
the answer is no. That's okay, Tom.
Well, not yet. I mean, we're making a rebirth, but when you go back and look at the Constitutional Prohibition back in 1880. I mean, I think back that time in 1880, I think Kansas had more acres and grapes. I think it was way around 5,300 acres than we do now by far. I mean, I guess we'd be lucky if we have maybe a couple thousand acres of grapes at this point.
Kansas is slow learner sometimes.
But that kind of support that Corey just described isn't present on the Kansas side.
I would say that the Missouri Wine and Grape Board is everybody's envy. They really do a fabulous job of really recognizing what the wine industry does for their state, and it's significant.
That's fairly unusual for Missouri, which ranks 48th and 49th in virtually every category of everything. You're describing something that you think the state's doing really well.
Yeah. You know, I think it's that partnership, the business state partnership that we developed, and when we started the rebirth of our industry, we put that into legislation right off the bat. You know, so we've had those laws for 20, 30 years.
Senator Tom Holland, do you want to push for the same kind of thing in Kansas?
Well, I mean, I think we're getting there. I mean, we're coming along. I mean, I got to toot Missouri's horn yet again, because they're talking about, you know, this technical that they bring. I mean, not many people know this, but when the phylloxera louse was basically tracked over to France in the mid-1860s, I mean, it was basically German, you know, grape growers from Hermann and the rest parts of Missouri. They're working with the French, basically, to find those American varietals of a brood stock so right. they could graft onto their grapes and actually save them.
Huh.
So, I mean, Missourians save, you know, French wine.
Can I say, just for the record, it is so weird to see you not in a suit and tie. After years of covering the State House in Kansas, I've always seen you in a tie. And here you are in a polo shirt and jeans, and you're looking a lot more relaxed than you normally do.
And does he usually have a glass of wine in his hand?
Yeah.
Not in the State House.
Okay, Doug Frost, tell us what the latest, this newest wine you've poured for us is here.
Sure. It's a grape called Chamberson. And Chamberson is a grape that's been around a long time, except we didn't really, people didn't grow it much, people didn't focus on it much until about the last 20 years or so. I think, a really, really interesting grape. And while we've already sung Norton's praises, and that is the state grape of Missouri, I will freely admit that at this point, this is my favorite red grape right now in this area. It makes a very friendly wine. It can sort of taste like Pinot Noir. It can sort of taste like Zinfandel. But in general, it's got this nice, bright raspberry sort of fruit, a real soft feel to it. And I think this is a mighty tasty Chamberson here.
I'm always amazed at how many adjectives you can slap on a glass of wine. It just blows me away.
I'm practicing.
And you're doing it live, and they're just coming out of your off your tongue like there is nobody's business.
It's
here.
All in yeah. the glass. You know, you just give a glass a little snoot, and there it is.
Corey, tell me about what are your reflections on this wine?
You know, again, I love Chamberson. I agree with Doug. Is really my kind of darling of the red grapes for our area. I think Michelle did a great job with this. It's got some of the, you know, bright Chamberson fruit, but it has a little more of that. You get this, like, I don't have the vocabulary of Doug, but you get this kind of, like,
no one
intensity of, like, earth in Chamberson,
yes.
which comes through.
You know? I just had a little sip. I think that's pretty accurate.
And it's cool. I mean, Chamberson's one of those grapes that, you know, 25 years ago, I'd kind of written off. I couldn't make a good one no matter what we tried to do. And, you know, again, with collaboration with other winemakers, you know, we changed our vineyard practices, changed some of our fermentation practices, you know, and now, I mean, across the region, we're cranking out great Chamberson, and we're intensifying the fruit. You know, I think we used to pick it too green. You know, it just, Chamberson can get this, like, really off-putting vegginess that just makes you want to throw it away before you ever put it in the bottle.
Yeah.
If you do it wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I think we've all worked kind of together to kind of lift up the quality of this product, and it's showing, you know.
Tom Holland, what do you think?
Oh, it's Chamberson is a great wine. I mean, for our little vineyard, I mean, Chamberson is our workhorse red grape. I mean, you know, we make it dry, we oak it, we can also turn around and basically make into a rosé. We back sweet. It's great for blending with others. We do a lot of blending with Steuben and other red wines, back sweeten that as well. So, I mean, to us, it's a very versatile grape. Our consumers really like it.
Yeah. I'm just wondering about why each of you has sort of invested such a significant part of your lives into growing grapes, into vineyards, into wine. And there's something so incredible about the connection between what you do and the earth and nature and the weather. You know, Michelle, it's a beautiful thing, at least from my standpoint. I'm not working it like every day like you are, but it's just fun to be out here and to see what you guys do.
I think that, you know, this winemaking and vineyards and having a winery, it's really a lifestyle, because you know, I live here on the property. I always tell people, if you see me pass the Basser stoplight, I'm on a real outing.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also, like, really agrees with me, because, you know, after I got out of college, I kind of found out that I suck at sitting at a desk.
Huh.
And but I've always spent a lot of time outside. My dad has traditional crops in another part of the state, and, you know, I just grew up as an outdoors person.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really, I love being in a vineyard all times of the year.
So, and you are in the vineyard at 12 months of the year?
Oh, yeah, because you have to go through and do all the pruning during the winter months. You know, you don't just go out and see your vineyard once a year and pick grapes. I mean, all summer long, your canopy management, your green pruning, your after harvest is over, you want that dormancy to set in. And pretty much from December to April, we spend pruning all the vines back. So
does it get tedious?
No.
Yeah.
No.
Not at all.
Well, I mean, I imagine it could for somebody, but
yeah.
You know, there every day there's something new in this business, and that really, and there's always something new to learn.
Mm-hmm.
So. I, you know,
that's one part of it that really comes through, Doug, when you're on with us every now and then. That just this notion that there's just so much to learn about this topic.
Yeah, if anybody claims that they know it all, they don't have a clue. The more I learn, the stupider I feel.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just.
I agree.
And you're one of four people on the planet who's a master of wine and master sommelier. So that's saying quite a bit.
Well, you know, I think if you ask the other three guys, they'd say the same thing. It's just nobody has mastery of it all. We just, you know, we try to get as much as we can. We try to taste as much as we can, which is a funny thing to say. You know, I'm basically just trying to taste everything I can in the world. That's my job. And it's, you know, so I think there are worse jobs.
Yeah. You know, Corey Baumgars with Les Bourgeois in Rocheport, Missouri. Why are you in this business? What drew you in?
Oh, man.
You have the floor.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
It again, is a perfect fit for me. I kind of was a science geek and love that. I also like to eat and drink a lot, you know, and I grew up with some ag background, you know, as well. So combining those three, it was really a perfect fit, and I couldn't really afford any of my habits. Without making a business out of it.
Yeah.
So.
Are you out in the vineyard 12 months out of the year, too?
Yeah, I am. My role's changed as our company's grown. So, unfortunately, I do have that desk job a little more than I used to ever want. But I get in the field every week. You know, I walk through with my vineyard manager. If I can free myself up, I'll go work in the fields with, you know, our vineyard manager and his staff. I get down the cellar. This time of year, they make me work a lot more because I get to go. It's harvest, so we're all working 80-hour weeks. So, I chime in wherever I can pitch in.
So 80-hour week, so you're doing what?
You know, everything from getting the grapes out of the field, but that's just half of it. And then you have to squeeze the grapes, you have to filter the juice, you have to ferment, and the grapes don't wait. You know, so when it's time to pick, if you want to make the optimum wine, you really have like maybe a 3-day window. And within that 3-day window, you have to get it from the field to juice to inoculated and fermenting. Otherwise, you're going to make an inferior product or lose it.
So right now, this is like tax season for an accountant. This is rock
this
and roll time
very,
for you guys.
Very much tax season.
Yeah.
You know, we all put on, if you work multiple vineyards, you know, I'll put on a couple thousand miles on my truck in a week looking around vineyards around Missouri.
Are purchasing. How many bottles do you guys put out a year?
Bottles, we do 55 to 60,000 cases. So 720,000 bottles.
Yeah, 700,000 bottles.
Is that what a medium size operation, Doug, or how would you describe
it? Yeah, I think that in our area is a medium sized operation, slightly larger than obviously larger than most. But if you compare it to California, that would be again considered a small or a smallish winery. You know, medium sized at best.
I'd say medium if you're looking around the country. But we're the second largest producer in Missouri, so. We're up there.
Again, if you're just joining us, we're coming to you live this morning from the Holy Field Winery in Basser, Kansas, having a lovely time here talking wine, talking growing this product in Kansas and in Missouri. You know, I get a sense, Corey, that just from hearing people talk, that the notion of going on a wine tour in Missouri was a joke 20 years ago. It's no longer a joke. And you hear my friends saying, we're going to go out and check out a few wineries this weekend. You're hearing that kind of talk a lot more now than you ever have before.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I think the legitimacy of our industry has increased. You know, what I've noticed it the most is for on-premise sales or restaurant sales. 15 years ago, I'm not on the sales side, but I'd occasionally go and do runs into restaurateurs and try to pitch our products, and they won't taste it, you know, maybe 20 years ago. And, you know, I went on one about two years ago, and every owner sat down and tasted all of our product. The bar manager was like, you know, we were just talking about getting some Missouri wines in here. You know, so we're getting placement on premise, which is a whole different market than selling on your site or in the grocery stores. So it's pretty exciting.
Yeah, I can remember, Doug Frost, when you first began to talk about wines grown in Missouri and Kansas, and in the back of my mind, I was thinking on the program, I was thinking, you know, you're just doing this because it's local and that's what you got to do. But again, the thought of that, the idea of this, isn't nearly as foreign to me today as it was when you first began talking to me 15 years ago.
Yeah, I think that definitely the attitudes have changed. Nonetheless, there are still plenty of people who roll their eyes at me when I say, oh, no, you should really try this, you should try that, from our area, whether Missouri or Kansas or Iowa, Nebraska, or what have you. And so there's still a lot of resistance there. And the thing is that we grow different grapes here than people grow in on the West Coast, where, you know, most people are familiar with wines and how they taste. And our grapes, because they're different grapes, will have slightly different tastes. And it's just like, you know, switching from an apple to an orange, you know, it's going to taste different. And once you discover that, if you expect that orange to taste like an apple, you've come to it with the wrong attitude. But yeah. I think these are delicious wines. I really do. Right now we're having a late harvest Vignol that is...
I was just going to ask you, what's this last one you've poured
here?
Yeah,
this is dessert stuff here. It's certainly very sweet, but here's the thing I think that is true about these grapes. I think these grapes make better dessert wines than the better known grapes particularly from California. I think it's because of this tartness, this inherent tartness at the finish, that you can have something that's so sweet and it feels very clean. It tastes very clean. When I compare this to a late harvest wine from California, late harvest wine from California to me is a little heavier, more ponderous, and this has this lightness and deftness to it that is, I think it's world class. I love taking these wines to Europe, and Europeans freak out when I tell them it's, you know, from Kansas or Missouri.
No kidding.
Yeah, it's really fun.
They just think that's just an incredible idea.
Yeah, no, it blows their minds. They had
Kansas
no idea that these existed.
Wine.
Yeah, yeah. That this quality existed.
Michelle, what are you seeing in terms of tourist traffic? People just coming through Baser and coming here to Holyfield because they want to check it out.
Well, I'd say I've seen it come a long way.
Mm-hmm.
When we started 23 years ago, when we opened the winery,
it was a joke, right?
Well,
or not far.
My
from
mom
it.
Worked in my tasting room, and she'd say that people would call her up and go, "What do you do there?" and I'd be like, "It's." And I still had another full time job in Kansas City. I'm like, "It's okay, Mom. You're there, and the door's unlocked." So you know, it's kind of like Field of Dreams, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you know, when we started here, State Avenue. 2440 Highway was just two lanes. There was no development in this direction at all. Even today, a lot of people don't know where Baser is.
Mm-hmm.
We're 6 miles west of the Sporting KC Park.
That's where we are.
That's where we are.
Yeah.
In Southeast Leavenworth County. And, you know, when we opened, I was kind of the only game in town. Nobody else had a winery or a tasting room in Northeast Kansas.
You were an oddity back then.
Yeah, and you know, we were bonded Kansas winery number 5, and all the other ones were further out in Salina and Topeka, and now we're the oldest winery in Kansas because 1, 2, 3, and 4 are no longer around. But we've seen more of a concentration of wineries in Northeast Kansas, and that has benefited everybody. Because now people talk like you say your friends do.
Yeah.
Hey, we're going to go on a little wine trip. You know, we can go, you know, we can hit four wineries and take a picnic and things like that. So the growth of the industry has benefited everybody because now people in our region really feel more connected to the local industry.
Yeah.
Before, if somebody came in from St. Louis, I could pick them out of a lineup because they knew so much about regional wines.
Yeah.
And I'd always say, "You must be from St. Louis," and they'd think that was funny. But they had the wine industry at their back door, and we didn't have that
mm-hmm.
in Kansas. So I'd say the industry is growing in a positive fashion, and the state of Kansas has a Land of Kansas program, and they're doing more and more to put Kansas wine out there for the tourists.
Well, let me just go out on a limb here. I think the man sitting to your left, Doug Frost, has had a lot to do with the notion of legitimizing
Absolutely.
Missouri and Kansas wine.
Well, and with somebody with Doug's credentials gives you an attaboy. The
it
general
means something.
It absolutely does. The general public listens to that. They know, you know, that he knows what he's talking about. And if you get a nod from Doug, it's kind of a good old good job type of thing. And our industry needs that from somebody with his credentials, and we really appreciate the fact that he really gets behind local products.
I wanted to ask you, Michelle, you and Tom Holland were both talking earlier in the show about this idea that the Kansas wine industry is still catching up to where it was once upon a time. Weren't you testifying once in Topeka and about some need in the wine industry, and a woman got up and said, you know,
yes,
we should be opposed to anything that has to do with alcohol? It was like Carrie Nation Redux right in front of you here, right?
Very interesting.
Yeah.
And I think, I don't know that Tom was there at that time. This has been a number of years ago, but that's when I got my introduction into the Women's Christian Temperance Union.
Yeah. Which is still active, right?
Yes. And apparently they have juice parties. But
they don't invite you to those parties.
They didn't want me to make port wine. I was testifying to be allowed to make port wine, and they said I was responsible for all bad things in Kansas, and I had to remind them that I was just a farmer.
Yeah, there you go.
And that was the end of my introduction to the Temperance Union.
Okay. Well, what a great afternoon, morning this has been for us at UpToDate to come out here and join you all. Michelle, thank you for your hospitality.
Oh, thank you for
What a
coming.
Beautiful place you have here.
Thank you so
So
much.
Nice to be here. Michelle Meyer of Holyfield Winery in Basser, Kansas. Corey Baumgars from Le Bourgeois Winery in Rocheport, Missouri. Thanks for coming over. Good to
You're
see
welcome.
You, Corey.
Thanks for having me.
Tom Holland, Haven Point Winery, also the Kansas Legislature. Tom, good to see you again.
Thank you, Steve.
And Doug Frost, our guide in all things wine. As
well,
always, Doug, thank you.
Always a pleasure.
What
thank
a pleasure. You.
You
bet. You can follow us on Twitter. We're at KCUR Up to Date. You can follow me at Steve Kraske. And don't forget to follow KCUR on Facebook. On Monday, our Smart Money experts return with financial advice for non-traditional couples. The great Bobby Watson composed our theme music. We had help this week from Ron Yerman, Suzanne Hogan, Chris Pruitt, Danny Alexander, Luke Martin, and Coy Duggar. Have a great weekend, all. I'm Steve Kraske, and you are up to date.